What up? About Last Night podcast listeners, your boy Adam Ray here. Got a quick question for you. You guys like making great money, right? Like super dope money? Oh, that's what I thought. Well, here's a really cool opportunity I just had to share with you. Driving with Uber. That's right, Uber. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's that popular smartphone app that connects riders with drivers. Yeah, man, everybody uses it. I take Uber pretty much every day. I take it when I'm trying to get to a comedy club. I take it when I'm trying to avoid drinking and driving. I take it when I just want to meet cool people. I'm telling you, the stories and the conversations I've had while in an Uber are incredible. One of my best buds met his current girlfriend through Uber because Uber drivers are the shit, man. They're cool, they're fun, they are good at conversation, and they get you where you need to go on time and in the appropriate amount of fun. You know why people love driving with Uber? I'll tell you what. The people who drive with Uber, they love it because they're their own boss, all right? They earn great money, and it's easy to start. All you need is a car and a license. That's all you need. Driving with Uber is great for anyone who needs flexibility. Parents, all right, if you're trying to find a way to easily work around your family schedule, perfect, drive with Uber. Students, you looking to make some extra cash in between those classes? Perfect, drive with Uber. Now's the prime time to cash in driving with Uber, all right? You guys are going to thank me for telling you how to get paid weekly. I could be getting into your car when you drive with Uber, and we could talk about all sorts of fun. We could talk about DuckTales. We could talk about Pop-Tarts and Fraggle Rock and how the Muppets are coming back. We could talk about weed, man. I'm telling you, if you've got a car and a license, put them both to work for you today and start earning serious life-changing cash. Sign up to Drive with Uber at drivewithuber.com. Visit drivewithuber.com. That's drivewithuber.com. Hey, guess what? Don't be a goober. Drivewithuber.com. Well, it's that special time of year again. You know what I'm talking about. When you hang out with your buds, you drink some beer, you eat some chips, you ignore your girlfriend. Football season's only just begun, but guess what? It already feels like the playoffs at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where millionaires are being crowned all season long. One-week fantasy at DraftKings means no season-long commitments. It's fantasy football on demand. You play where you want, when you want, with the players you want. You could play on a boat in the middle of Nova Scotia. You could play in your stepmom's dildo drawer. You could play under the sewer like the fucking Ninja Turtles, man. It's your world. It's your game. And with $1 million up for grabs every week, $1 million every week, every game is the big game and every play matters. So first and 10 in the first quarter feels like fourth and goal with 1 second left. And a long touchdown run could mean more than just a victory for your favorite team. It could mean you've just turned your love of football into a $1 million payday. This isn't fantasy as usual, baby. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use promo code ALN to play for free for a shot at $1 million in this week's Millionaire Maker event. Enter ALN for free entry now only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Very fun episode today. I don't know if he's even ever done a podcast before. He probably has. He's been in the comedy game for quite some time. His story of how he got here is really unlike any story you've heard of anyone who's come to Los Angeles. The people he met, the journey he got on, the projects he's worked on, Key and Peele, most recently the MTV Video Music Awards, directing all the sketches for Miley Cyrus, what he's got coming up, his obsession with Jose Canseco. I'm talking about Mr. Payman Benz. That's right, everybody, Payman Benz. Good buddy of mine, one of the first guys I met post-college in the comedy game. He directed a short that Adam Devine and I and our buddy Tyler Spindell starred in. He was in the fucking... See, I always think he directed it because that's what he's a fucking comedy director juggernaut now and a rising star in that department. But I always forget that he starred in it, which is... we'll get into, and which is so funny that Devine and I were there and Payman brings up how he had all the lines and he's not even really an actor. That was with Brooklyn Decker at the time. Jesus Christ. Time flies when you're not hanging out with Brooklyn Decker anymore. Anyway, the episode is so great. I'm really pumped for you guys to hear it, especially because I don't think Payman's done a podcast before. We had a lot of laughs on this one. Great stories. Follow Payman on Twitter at Payman Benz, PaymanBenz. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Brad this William will be in the weekend of, it's late. I got back earlier today. I was in Fort Worth, Texas this past weekend, and holy shit, Hyenas, you guys came out in full force, man. That was my first time at any of the Hyenas clubs, and shout out to Randy who runs those clubs. I had a fucking blast. Club was dope. Can't wait to hopefully come back to one of the other locations in Dallas or Plano. Had a great time, all you ALN listeners. Thanks for coming out, bringing your merch, signed some shirts, picked up some new fans, sold some CDs. It was a blast. Go see Hyenas in Fort Worth if you ever get a chance to be out there. Met some cowboys. Had a girl tell me to lick her cake. I thought she said something else. She actually had a cake for her friend that she brought. It was super weird. There was a show where a guy laughed like an extinct pterodactyl creation of some sort. I got all the audio. I might animate it. It was some of the craziest crowd work I've ever been a part of. Anyway, that was a blast. But this weekend, Brad Williams will be in Minnesota, Bloomington, Minnesota, at the House of Comedy, September 30th through October 4th. Get your tickets at houseofcomedy.com. I will be at Colorado State on Wednesday with Alice Wedderlin and Thomas Dale. I will be at the Laugh Factory on Thursday at 8 o'clock with Brad. We have our own Brad Williams, Adam Ray show. The lineup is going to be announced later today, and it's fucking bananas. So I would try to come 8 o'clock to the Laugh Factory in Hollywood to see Brad Williams and I if you can. The lineup really is not fair if you don't live in Los Angeles. Anyway, check all my dates at AdamRayTV.com. I got a few more coming up this fall, and I hope you guys will come out. And of course, when you come out, bring the merch that you've purchased from EstoyMerchandise.com, EstoyMerchandise.com. Get all your shirts, your mugs. We appreciate all the support. Hopefully, you guys are bringing that stuff to the shows when you come out, because we love signing it and talking to you guys. It's really been pretty rad. Some of the Clooney Bloop references I get said to me and face-to-face at the shows. Some that weren't even sent in as stories. But and speaking of which, those prizes are coming your way. Brad gets back tomorrow, and we will get the Clooney Bloop prizes off to the winners. Send those Vegas stories, too, by the way. Hope you enjoyed that bonus up with Mark Saratella. Been getting those Vegas stories, and we're going to be picking a winner pretty soon. And also, we're getting close to the 200th episode of About Last Night, in which we will have the best of About Last Night with some of the highlights from our 200 episodes. Going back, it's like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe that even happened or we even interviewed that person. It's really going to be an awesome collection of moments and sound bites. Can't wait to release that in probably 4 to 5 weeks. Some really dope guests coming up. Next week, we're recording Howie Mandel and Jeff Garlin from Curb Your Enthusiasm. So pumped for those episodes, so get ready. Download, subscribe to the show on iTunes. Tell your friends to get on your Android, your iPhone on Stitcher, on the podcast app. However you listen, AboutLastNightPodcast.com has all past eps. Get the podcast. Tell your friends, man. It's easy. You subscribe, you download, you listen, you love. And when you go to iTunes and subscribe, give a 5-star rating. Takes 2 seconds to do it right now. Give a 5-star rating. Comment on the iTunes page. That helps us climb the charts and continue to bring you guys great entertainment. I'm saying this whole intro, by the way, post-Seahawks defeat. Not an easy Sunday evening for old Adam. My Seahawks are 0-2. It's all right. It's early. It's early, but it's early enough to be like, it's 0-2. You know, the commentators just love to speculate this early on. Yeah. Well, you know what? Enjoy your speculating as long as you can get it for the next few weeks, because Cam's coming back. We're going to bring Cam Chancellor out of his holdout. I just know it. God, please, Cam, come back. Anyway, that's all the Seahawk talk. Those are the Twitter handles. That's the merch info. Those are the tour dates. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with our buddy, Payman Benz.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's About Last Night.
Maybe like a sign that you're in a bad neighborhood is how fast those Halloween only stores pop up and like how many of them. So like if you're driving around and it's like mid-September and within a mile radius of your house, there's like four Halloween stores. You're like, I'm in a bad neighborhood.
I'm in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah, why is that?
Liquor stores and Halloween stores.
Yeah, liquor stores, Halloween stores. You're like, I gotta get my shit together because I've seen 14 Iron Man costumes within a square mile. This isn't good for me.
Hey, speaking of which, and I don't know if it's premature to talk about it, but Halloween, what's everybody going as? Or is this going to be a conversation where we all go, you know, it's I'm in my 30s now. I don't fucking dress up.
I haven't dressed up in years.
This won't be any different.
The last time I dressed up, so this was before Jersey Shore. This is important.
Okay.
Some friends and I got
key detail.
We got really obsessed with these videos on YouTube that these specific Guidos were putting online of them driving to the club, and I don't even know how we found them, but there was like 7 or 8 videos, and these guys were hilarious, and it was their videos of them dancing and in the car, and we didn't know what the hell they were talking about. And we thought they were like the funniest guys ever. So we all dressed as Guidos one year.
Wow.
And we all put like fake tanner on, and I had like this like lip gloss that had cayenne pepper, so my lips got all puffy.
Oh,
and,
like, you were dedicated.
Dedicated. Holy rolled up my pants. I had a pink shirt made that said tits out or get out. So like, and my buddies did like blowouts. Like, and we were just assholes all night. We were in character.
Sure.
And we get home and we're like, God, that was so liberating. We should do that every year.
Yeah.
No joke. 3 days later, we see a trailer for Jersey Shore, and we were like, no, we can never do it again.
Right.
We can never.
Because now we're Jersey Shore people.
Because now this is going to be famous. We knew it was going to be popular. It was clear.
Really?
And then the show came out, and we were like, oh, this show's great. And if anyone sees it.
You could tell from episode one, couldn't you?
Yeah, you just knew. You're like, oh, well, this is, they heightened like what the real world was, so it killed the real world.
Right.
And then that was the last time I dressed up. And like as a kid, every year I was Jose Canseco. So I've never like.
Okay, I was gonna ask you about that because I was going through your Instagram today and like kind of doing research on you, and I found so many Jose Canseco pictures.
Really, I haven't looked at the whole.
There's
thing.
Like
how
like,
many are there?
Within the last 3 months, there's at least 4 Jose Canseco
Good
pictures.
God, I feel like that's a lot.
And
I feel like that's
I was like,
three
what is
too
this?
Many.
Yeah, what is this man's unhealthy
obsession? Let me explain.
Or healthy. The obsession, depending on how you were raised.
I'm from the Bay Area.
Okay.
And so I was a big Oakland A's fan and Jose Canseco
fan. Bash Brothers, yeah.
Yeah, all those years where they were.
That was a great time.
Yeah, it was great. And we knew that he was a lunatic growing up. We knew that he was on coke because he was sniffing all the time when he was on the field. And then
he's just like, he just like looking at the foul lines like, oh, man.
Like, boy,
those look really good right now.
Jose, stand up, get off the ground. And then his subsequent like meltdown that he's had in the, is like as someone that works in comedy is so satisfying that my hero is like so it's like sarcastic. It's like funny to me. He's a lunatic. I've gotten him to wish me happy birthday on Twitter a few times.
That's awesome.
That's like the greatest thing ever. And I realize the way you get a response from him is you have to ask a very vain question. So I'll be like, hey, Jose, who should play you if they make a movie about you? He will respond to that.
And what is his answer?
He said
Steven Seagal.
Kurt Russell?
He said LOL, never thought about that. Liar. No way.
Oh shit, dude.
And then like one time I said something to him and then he put I love your name. Oh, because I had a really stupid like header picture that made it look like I had big muscles. And he said, love your picture, very funny, LOL, hug for you. Jose Canseco said, hug for you.
Hug for you?
That's what he says to people when he's like...
Is that like... Is he trying to replace like XOXO and with like hug for you?
I think so.
I mean, that sounds like a charity that some like bored white actress would start.
Oh, come on, Selma Blair.
Yeah. Selma Blair when she's on like some celebrity apprentice is like, I'm playing for the Hug for You Foundation.
It was started by former Bash Brother Jose Canseco, who's my partner in crime.
And we just find kids that aren't getting hugged and we just wrap them in love and blankets and hot cocoa.
Yes, and Oakland A's jackets.
Yeah,
I buy that.
Starter Oakland A's jackets. Yeah. Has to be starter.
Now, the fascination was just that he was your hero growing up, and it was like that, by the way, that's what's incredible about Twitter, is that like now you can, I mean,
reach
I think
out.
I think that's what the celebrities love about it too, is that they can connect with their fans. But also for us, it's like you can now, like a buddy of mine tweets with Sean Kemp.
With Sean Kemp?
And we grew up idolizing him. And he like went to one of his shows. He's a stand-up. And he goes, my buddy goes to his bar in Seattle. So they like I see them having conversations on Twitter. I'm just like, fuck both of you. This is the coolest thing ever.
But Sean Kemp's like cool. Jose is like a joke. Like
But you can still you can still reach out.
Yeah,
like,
it's crazy.
Hell,
yeah.
We got Jerry Ferrara on this podcast because
really? just from reaching out. Yeah,
Tweeter. Just from Tweeter was the nickname of the first baseman that led off for Jose Canseco. Tweeter Jensen in the Bucks right now. Tweeter, he got that nickname from his high-pitched voice and his fascination with Looney Tunes cartoons. Yeah.
Or it was the original name of Beaker the Muppet. They were like, Tweeter, then they're like, how about Tweaker? No, that's too fucking, we can't have a meth Muppet. Yeah. All right, how about Beaker?
Done. Yeah, but like, yeah, we just reached out to him Adam reached out to him on Twitter, and then he got back to us, and all of a sudden he's sitting in that chair on our podcast.
But you know who hasn't responded? Katy Perry.
And we're kind of disappointed
really?
About
yeah,
that.
I mean, I've tweeted at her more than I'd like to admit as a grown man. But, you know, again, with the hope that, I just was doing shows in Vegas. I did the morning news, and the woman was asking me all these questions. It was basically, like, setting me up for, like, asking questions that there was no reason to ask me, but I was like, ah, it's the fucking new. Like, she's just, I need to feed what she's trying to. She's like, Britney Spears is in town. She's pretty hot, right? And I was like, is this one of those VH1 clip shows where you're trying to get me to say stupid jokes?
Yeah.
Because here we go. And so then I started saying stuff, and then I was like, yeah, I love Britney Spears. Like, actually, I want to marry her. And then she goes, why don't you give her a little message into the camera? I was like,
what the
fuck? Okay. Like,
weird.
It's just weird, some weird fucking video message fetish you have. So then I just started going like, Britney, I love you. I was like, I want to have your babies. And I go, you know what? That didn't sound right. I go, you know what? I do want to have your babies. I love you that much. Let's figure out a way medically for me to have a junior situation, and I'll be your Arnold to your DeVito. And I want to get this baby thing going. And then they played most of that in like my segment on the morning thing, and then they tweeted it at her, and so part of me was like, what if she watches it? Because that's the other thing,
like, who knows,
why wouldn't she, if a fan of a news station was like, this comedian's, you know, trying to whatever, and so then for a couple days after I was like, please let her respond and come to a show. Please let her cancel her $1 million Planet Hollywood extravaganza and come see me at the Tropicana.
I don't see why she wouldn't. I mean, based on that, you kind of have to follow it up. Like, speaking of like pop stars like that, this is a nice little segue for our guest, Payment Benz, is you were recently directing sketches on the VMAs this year.
Yep.
And you got to work
By the way, that's fucking dope. When I saw you doing that, because... shit, man, it was probably, I don't know, 7 years ago when I met you? Six?
I think so,
right?
Yeah.
And
you were
directing us in the, me and Adam Devine, and...
Oh, and that...
Oh, no, you were acting. It was me, you, and Adam Devine.
In that, it was a thing for Just Go With It with Brooklyn
Our buddy
Decker.
Tyler Spinell was directing it,
And then Brooklyn Decker gave me a wedgie. It's funny, I was joking...
But weren't you just starting to direct at that time?
Well, I had been directing the whole time out here. Okay, it was just that I acted in my early videos before I knew actors, and Tyler thought I was really funny. And what always makes me laugh about that sketch is when you watch it, you have... Adam, who's an accomplished actor, you, who's an accomplished actor, you guys are performers, and the sketch, once it's edited, is just me and Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's
and I'm
great.
Like, what? I'm like, I'm not even the. I felt like such a dick.
I think I
like,
got
I should
one.
Not be the guy getting the wedgie from her, and like it was crazy. That was great.
That was awesome. That was it was for Just Go With It, the Sandler movie, and you know Tyler's Adam's nephew, so he directed this thing for Sony, and it was Brooklyn was supposed to be like one of the guys. By the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still wake up every morning just going, Brooklyn Decker's so hot. Like,
hot that, and so nice.
So nice.
Do you remember after
that's
every...
That's almost not fair that she's, like, nice on top of it.
Oh, she's so funny.
Cool
yeah,
fun.
We're all nobodies.
After every take of the wedgie, she gave me a hug. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't use porn anymore. I just jerk off to that memory.
So do I.
Wait, you jerk off to me jerking off to your memory?
Yeah, dude, it's complicated. It's so complicated.
I mean, Brooklyn Decker gave you a wedgie. Like, a lot of guys would pay so much money to have that happened to him.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh my God.
One Brad Williams, how much would you pay?
Oh, at least $500. just to get the Brooklyn Decker wedgie? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's like on the secret menu on like the...
Carl's Jr.?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take the teriyaki turkey burger, and I'll also take the Brooklyn Decker wedgie. And they're just sitting there
the
like...
The wedgie wrap.
Yeah.
It's a kid with a speech impediment.
The wedgie wrap. Well done, sir.
That was amazing.
That was amazing.
So you were already directing at that point.
Yeah, I had been directing stuff since... Like, the first thing I ever shot was in 04 in college. So, like, it wasn't that... And then I've been out here almost 10 years, but I've just been pretty much directing the whole time.
And so you were... So that was, like, the first thing you acted in.
The first thing that I didn't make,
yeah,
that I was probably that. I think Tyler may have had me in one other thing before, but and then a couple things I had done. But it's been directing up until then. Mm-hmm. But it was weird with Miley because it's different because I've been working with just comedians.
Yeah. Right, because she's obviously a personality and she's done SNL, so she's used to being funny. But at the same time,
Montana was a comedy, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Allegedly.
Right? Yeah.
I like how all of us just secretly kind of eye the other one at the corner of our like, did you watch it? You say it first if you watched it.
I researched it for the gig.
But yeah, but she's not a trained comedian. So yeah. So when you're directing someone who doesn't have a background in comedy, but they're doing comedy, is there like a different approach that you have to it?
I just try to get to know them personally because to me that's all that matters because that we have to have a connection if we're going to make funny stuff together. And the moment I met, because I got contacted by the company, I'd already worked for the production company.
Okay.
They did the Key and Peele Super Bowl special, and I did all the sketches on the Super Bowl special.
Unbelievable.
So great. So, all the Marshawn Lynch stuff was awesome.
It's unbelievable, dude.
So fun. Oh my God. They were so good at that. And I honestly think if, and I hate to bring this up, if the Seahawks would have won, I think Marshawn and them would have tweeted that sketch because it came out right. I was
dude.
You know he loves biscuits and gravy. You know he loves that bit. Because I was so satisfied when they showed me that script. I was like, this is such a great way to make fun of what he does without really making fun of it.
He would have, of course he would have, dude. He's you see the shit he does for Conan and
he's
the
funny.
League.
Yeah,
he did
he did a bit on the League too, and he was actually funny in it, he was playing a character.
Did you see the HGTV thing he just did for Skittles?
No.
Oh my God, with the
I did.
With the kind of the older white woman who's
what does he do?
He's just great. He's just, he's just very charming. And at the end of it, you're like, I think he's going to fuck this woman.
I mean, would we be surprised?
Yeah.
How many sketches did you shoot with Miley?
We shot four, but three aired because one of them, we literally came up to the last minute. We couldn't get anyone. So we just shot something else that was funny, but it was like, what's the point of this? The show was already over time and this they didn't air.
Yeah.
So we shot one with Miley. And it had Ike Barinholtz and Andy Samberg in it. And that one, I was really happy with that one. We shot it in no time. And then we did one where she had a sleepover with a bunch of rappers at her house. And then another one with her and Snoop and her grandma and her pig. It was crazy.
Oh my God.
And we
that
shot everything.
Like a weird LSD dream there.
Yeah, well, it was super trippy. And
Miley Cyrus, Snoop Dogg, and a pig. Mary fuck kill.
Yeah. I don't know. Fuck Snoop.
Mary
the pig. No, Mary Miley, kill the pig.
Well, yeah, so you have bacon.
Is it kosher?
Yeah. Sure.
Wait, so you said the production company reached out to you.
So they reached out. They were like, hey, do you want to direct these sketches? And I was like, sure. I was really excited. Yeah. And I was already on. I did all the sketches for Hannibal's show.
Yeah.
So I talked to the producer there. He gave me the date. I was like, look, I got to do this. So he gave me the days off. And then
it's really so much timing. People don't realize that how many things you potentially miss out on because you're already committed to something.
Yeah.
And
totally.
It's a bummer because once you get to a point to where you're like desired, you're like, I should be able to do everything, right? It should all work out all the time because now I'm at a point where people want me and everyone should bend, but it just doesn't happen.
I just said no. I never said no for my first 8-9 years out here, so it's
you
weird.
You can't.
It's weird. Yeah, and also I didn't get paid for anything I did the first 8 years because it was all practice.
People don't realize that.
Yeah, you're just getting better. The 99% of the people that get successful out here, the story is very unglamorous. You just worked hard and sacrificed.
Yep.
The random stories you hear of, oh, they met this person here and they pass them a script, that bullshit feeds the delusion of the crazy so hard.
Yeah.
And they do it's... I get some weird messages from time to time.
Oh,
I was dumb and I would respond initially and then I realized what I was doing.
Oh, yeah. My freshman year at USC, I took a guy who I was made friends with who was in the acting program who was a senior, and I saw some flyer for become a Hollywood superstar. It was, I'm exaggerating, but it was that delusional to where I go, Brandon, we can have a star on the Walk of Fame.
All we got to do is sign up for this class.
Oh, my God. We went to it.
That's directed by the guy that played Cody on Step by Step.
Yeah, it's a DVD of him being like, what's up, guys? I played Cody Lambert, and you can too. And we're like, what?
$800.
He's not in the rest of the video. Yeah. They got him for just that intro.
And then it's a guy doing his voice for the rest of it, doing his voiceover. But it was such a scam. And we paid. I remember at the end of it, we signed. Then we had individual meetings, and then we walked out. And Brandon goes, "Dude, you just wasted 6 hours of my life." I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "That was so fucking bullshit." I go, and then I just stepped back and thought about what it was and go, "Oh yeah, it was." But I was so like. You're focused on,
and
like,
you're just drunk on the dream.
Yeah, you're dream. Scared. Yeah. You don't know what it is. Like, you don't really get it until you get here, and then see how it plays out.
Yeah,
like, I'm not a networker. I just don't know how to do that shit.
Right.
So I'm just like, well, I'll just make shit, and then hopefully it works out.
I'm sure you're better at it now, just from being around so many sets and just having to.
Yeah,
right. I've
I've shot so much stuff at this point.
Wait, so where did you came out to LA from? Where?
The Bay Area.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, and so I mean, really, the last 8 or 9 years, I mean, just the last couple, would you say, when things really kind of like clicked for you?
Yeah, like initially, crazy stuff happened, but it didn't lead to anything.
Right.
Like literally within my first, because I had some shorts in film festivals, and literally within my first year out here, Sandler saw a bunch of my work. And brought me into Happy Madison, and I was actually up to direct The House Bunny.
Shut up!
No kidding.
So I met with like the head of Columbia Pictures, dude. I knew three people in the whole city, and Sandler saw my shit and liked me, and I went in.
Did you meet with him?
I met with him. Yeah. So I went in and met with him and the people at his company, like Jack Caraputo and Heather Perry. They were all so nice to me, and then they sent me the script, and they're like, "Hey, we want you to. What do you think of this script? It was really funny. Adam had done the most recent pass." And then I was like, "Yeah, I like it." They're like, "Cool, you're going to meet with Doug Belgrade tomorrow." I was like, "Great." So I like look him up and I'm like, "Oh shit, that's the head of Columbia Pictures."
Right. What are you thinking at this point? You're just like, you're coming down with the Jose Canseco poster and a little bit of lotion. And then, I mean,
it was so weird. Like, I had met Adam like about a month before. So it was already between that and the meeting, there was some time. But I was freaking out. And like at that time, I had stuff that was doing well online, but this was like, oh wait, I figured I was going to be out here for 10 years before I got to a meeting like this. And then the meeting went well and it was great. And then when we walked out, the people at Happy Madison were like, "You're one of our guys now. Like, who's your agent or manager?" And I was
Jesus.
Like, "I don't know any
I
of that
I don't have
stuff.
One. So, my dad."
Yeah. So Heather Perry over there called the agencies and was like, "Adam loves this guy. Sign him." So then I had a buddy I was making shorts with at the time, and even though Adam called me in, I was like, "Well, we want to make stuff together. So if you sign me, you got to sign him." So like, we both signed with UTA.
How pumped was he getting that phone call?
We were both. I mean, he was my roommate at the time. So I was just like, "Dude, I'm not doing this alone because it's just as
big
weird.
Time move, dude."
So that was 07. So then we got with UTA, and then you know we did one of the first web series for Crackle. So we had some stuff early. Like people here, comedians kind of knew who I was, but I wasn't like. I was still broke. I wasn't making any money. I would have a good month and then a bad. A good month means I went to Paquito Moss like once a week. But like, and then I had like
what a great way to gauge your financial situation.
Yeah, exactly. We're like, "Yeah, I can get a studio plate tonight."
Yeah. Paquito Moss, dude, that's three times this week. Dude, what the fuck's going on? And you're, how much money you really got?
I'm
dude,
living
better,
the dream.
You better slow down, bro. better slow down.
I saw how much guac you brought home.
That's the thing. When you stop flinching when they say guacamole is extra, that's when you're like, "Oh man, I have made it in this business." We're like, guacamole is $1.29 extra.
You're like, "Huh? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever, dude." Yeah. I didn't even, don't care. Yeah. Like, that's, you know, like, "All right, I'm making it."
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
So Sandler, what did he, like, say to you? I mean, what was in the meeting?
So the initial thing was, you had brought up Tyler earlier. So what happened is in 05, I had a short at the Newport Beach Film Festival.
Cool.
In 06, my buddy and I each had one. And we became friends with the people at that festival. 07, we had won this other, like, this magazine short film contest. The guy that ran Newport Beach Film Festival was there. I had a couple of drinks and was feeling a little brave. I'm not normally a drinker.
Yeah.
And then he was talking to us, and I was like, "Hey, man, what if you just gave us a whole shorts program?" I was like, "We got a bunch of shorts no one's ever seen, and this is 07. I was like, "There's a lot of sketches online. Like, there's a lot of comedy online right now, because this is really early YouTube. And I was like, "There's a lot of stuff I bet the audience hasn't seen." He just shakes my hand and goes, "You got a program." And I was like, "I'm sorry, what?" An hour later, I get an email from the head programmer that was like, "Let me know when you've picked your shorts. Like, you have a program at this festival."
Holy crap.
So I'm like, "What?" It was eight of ours, and I think I produced one or two of them. The rest of them I directed, and I acted in a lot of them because it was a lot of our older stuff.
Yeah.
And picked a bunch of random shorts. One of them, a mutual friend between Tyler and I, had shown me, and I was like, oh, this is a really funny short. So I picked it. I emailed Tyler and stuff. And like a week before the screening, my buddy's like, does he look familiar to you? And I was like, no. He's like, that's Sandler's nephew. And I was like, what? He doesn't have his last name. And then I kind of saw it in the face.
Totally. And then once you get to know Ty, you're like, oh, yeah, you're totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got the like, Sandler. Hey, buddy. Yeah. So one of the first shorts I did out here was for Nick Swartzen. And I remember Nick telling me that he had shown it to Adam. And this was like a month before all of this. And I remember thinking, like, Sandler saw something that was like,
I know, dude, that's
in the camera I held and I sure. edited on my lap. Like, he saw that shit.
I mean, I'm assuming that also, as he was for us, one of your influences growing up.
Yeah,
I mean,
he made me feel comfortable about being weird. And that was the thing I valued in junior high and high school. It was like, mm-hmm. oh, he's not cool and he's embracing it. I wasn't used to comedians being like that.
Yeah. Right.
So then I was like, oh, that's crazy that's his nephew. And then he showed up to the screening. And I'm like, what the fuck is he doing here? So I went up and I was like, hey, I'm the one that picked his short. I'm the one that did that short with Nick. And he's like, oh, you did that? I was like, yeah. He's like, all right. He was super nice. And then I thought he left during the screening, like after his Tyler short, and then I'm walking up after the Q&A and I see him and he's walking towards me and I'm like, just say thanks and fucking walk away. Don't make a fool of yourself.
So, yeah.
And he's like, come here, I want to talk to you. And he takes me aside and he's like, you're really fucking good, man. He's like, the directing, the cutting, the writing, the acting, you're really fucking good. I'm freaking out. So
did your mind go blank? Did you just like not even hear it after a while?
I did, but it went blank because my response to Adam Sandler was, thanks, man, you're good too.
He's like, yeah, I know.
He smiled because he realized like I was an idiot. Yeah. So then
you good at movies, man.
Yeah. So he was like, hey, can you do a Palestinian accent? Because he was about to shoot Zohan. And mm-hmm. at that time, there wasn't a lot of guys out here that were like, you know, sure. like, you know, Hassan wasn't like as visible as now. And I don't know, Kumail,
Maz Sobrani, maybe, yeah.
Maz and Fahim, all these guys weren't like as visible then. And he just saw me in a bunch of shorts on a big screen. I could learn that accent. He's like, all right, I'll have Nick call you. So the next day, Tyler, before he went back to school, was like, hey, man, you want to shoot a sketch real quick? And I was like, sure, let's go shoot a sketch. So we're shooting a sketch at Owen Benjamin's house.
Yeah.
And he's like, yo, my uncle's going to come by to say bye to me. And Owen's old house was like a frat house. I don't know if you ever went. I mean, it was not a place you want Adam Sandler to show up
yeah,
to.
Yeah.
And he shows up with his first daughter as like a baby. And he's just like, oh, hey, honey, these are how degenerates live. He was hilarious. And the first thing this is the day after. The first thing he says is, hey, Payman, I showed your stuff to everyone at the office today. Everyone thinks you're really funny. And I was like, you went to the I didn't give him a card or anything. I was like, what? So we joked around, and he was really nice, and, you know, I was, like, really comfortable around him and, like, trying to make him laugh and stuff.
Well, it seems like he makes you real comfortable, too.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
And
man.
He's one of those guys where when you see him, he's not in the suit. He's not draped in Armani.
T-shirt, sweatpants.
He's wearing the T-shirt that when he got a sandwich that day, the guy went, here's a T-shirt of my sandwich shop. And like, Sandler's wearing that shirt.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Like, he's just a dude. He seems like he's very approachable.
He is. And he was so sweet with his daughter. And you're like, oh, this is a good man. Like, mm-hmm. He was so obsessed with her. It was great.
It's awesome.
So then I leave, and then Tyler calls me, and he's like, my uncle loves you. Like, call him. So by the time I get home, there's an email that's like, they want to meet with you at the company.
so
I went
crazy.
And met, and then a month later, they sent me the script of
House Bunny.
House Bunny. Mm-hmm. And then I remember hearing, they're like, yeah, he called Swartzen and said he really wants you to do this movie. And then budget went up, and the studio was like, this is insane. We can't, because I literally, the most people on my set was like three up to that point.
And now you're going to have a major production.
Yeah, and it was like, I didn't know what an art department was. Like, I didn't know. I was holding boom and directing. Like, I didn't do shit.
Yeah.
So that didn't happen. He had me audition for Zohan, and I didn't get it because I was super nervous when I went in. But then I know that, you know, he would watch my stuff.
But you're on the radar.
So I literally owe it to him. So he's a...
That's so great.
It's crazy. So, like, that happened right away, and then it was like 8 years of like struggling, but it was like that gave me the motivation of, okay, I caught somebody's eye,
so I just can actually do this.
Yeah, just keep working hard.
So valuable.
Don't be shitty to people, and maybe it'll work out.
Because guess
lucky.
What? That's what happened to you is pretty rare.
crazy,
right? Yeah. I don't know. If, yeah. I mean, it's to because usually it's like you said, and you probably would have been grinding the way you've been grinding anyway without that happening because you came down. I feel like
I came down to work. Yeah. Like, I don't. I feel like a lot of people come down here and they celebrate right away, and I'm like, why are you celebrating?
Yeah.
Fuck, didn't we come here to make shit?
Yeah, like, yeah. You're just here. Like, yeah, that's like, anyone can do that.
Anyone can come in a car.
I've seen young comedians like four, five, 6 months in, post things on Facebook like, come to my 1 hour DVD special taping. I'm like, what the fuck? Five? You just got here. Like,
that's crazy.
Like, you got it. It's, and it's such a difficult place to start any of it because you see, you're around someone. You want to be so good so quick. And right. like, what I try to tell any young comic that asks me, like, you know, how do I avoid skipped open mic thing and the bringer shows and get to these good shows? How do I get past the Laugh Factory? I'm like,
you can't.
You've been doing stand up not even 2 years. I was like, you got to just enjoy the process of getting better and like, and just know that like,
right.
look, that this is will be
so frustrating to hear.
I mean, it's so much easier said than done because when you're in the moment, you're just, I mean,
sure,
we
you
all
want to get
through
past
it.
It's and like, and but like, even your story, you saying it's so rare that Sandler did that, at the same time, you had the work that he saw.
Right.
So,
yeah. right.
Adam Sandler didn't come down from Mount Olympus, touch you on the forehead, and be like, you are now a director. Like, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, you still put in the hours. It's always amazing to me when people say, how do you do it? The same way, like, when someone loses a bunch of weight and someone goes like, oh, how'd you lose the weight? Well, I don't know, diet and exercise? The
right.
same way, that the thing that has been tried and true that works every single time?
Or if you're Jared, Subway and kid porn.
Get out of here, But people just expect you.
Of course, that's the sound effect to follow a child porn.
Brilliant comedy director. What's your go-to comedy sound effect?
It really is the best, though. But it makes everything better.
But basically, everyone's looking for you to tell them, oh, I just took this magic pill and I lost all the weight. Oh, yeah. I just went to this improv workshop, was there for a week, and now I'm on SNL. Like,
right.
they're just waiting for that magic key, and that doesn't happen.
And
it doesn't exist.
I think people like don't realize what experience does because they made the right decision not giving me that movie. It would have sucked.
I was just going to ask.
It would have been so bad because I didn't know anything. Like
right.
I never shot. You never used a dolly before. I never had more than two people in a scene. Like I don't know what to do. And also like a single guy that just moves out here.
Payman, what do you want the extras to do? Extras?
I don't.
What?
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, "Yeah, you're gonna go direct a movie at the Playboy Mansion." I would have OD'd on something because, like, I haven't done coke, but I probably would have done it there,
stress.
And I would have
sure.
died immediately. So,
yeah.
But when it happened, there was a guilt that I felt because I knew that it was early. Even though I know he saw my work, it made me want to work harder. Well, I was like,
it's awesome.
I want to convince myself that this wasn't bullshit.
Well,
so
sure,
I worked
and
extra hard.
Yeah,
after,
and then
that.
You know that there's going to come an opportunity where where Sandler probably looks to somebody else, or you go into a meeting with someone and they know that you have Sandler's blessing, and you want to be able to come with it and have like the stuff to back up that endorsement. You,
right.
You don't just want to be like, he said I was good, so I can do it, right?
Yeah exactly.
Like, you
just got to keep getting better. It's
mm-hmm.
all practice to get better. I'm better than, I think I suck last year. I think I'm better. I feel that every year. Every year I look at the stuff the year
crazy?
Before and I'm like, God, I was why did anyone watch this shit? Like, I sucked. I think I peak constantly, and I think that's what keeps me hungry to just keep trying to get better.
Yeah. So, like, when you're doing your Key and Peele, when you're doing all that, like, were there moments when you were just like, oh, man, we fucking hit it right on the head, and, like, you go back and watch a sketch, and you're like, that was flawless? Is there any sort of experience where you're like, fuck, that was flawless, at least in the moment? I mean, obviously, in hindsight, you're going to be like, oh, there's... Now I see what we really could have done there. Or
Key and Peele was different because it was like I for years I was the guy people came to if they were like, you know how to work with no money and no resources, right? Great, and no time. Here you go. You get to shoot a web series in one day,
which is a blessing and a curse, right?
Yeah. So like I learned a lot, but after a few years, it was like, no, I can do more than this. And then you try to go out for bigger stuff, and they're like, can you do this? You're like, I can. Nobody's let me fucking do
like,
it.
Well, why haven't you? Because no one's giving me a shot.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because I'm the king of the no budgets.
Right. Exactly. And then so Key and Peele was different because they had. You know, I directed on this last season that's airing right now. We shot it last year, so I had to hold that secret for a very long. I knew it was over, and I couldn't say anything. I had to like people were like, is it over? I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know what they're gonna do. Like, fucking, yeah, it's over.
You knew, yeah.
That was different because they had this. You know, their crew was so fat. Like, I just can't believe how good that crew was. They shot two sketches a day on that show. That's the
sometimes
there was like a big one, it would be an all day thing. But it was all two per day.
That's insane. Because normally it's like one sketch for a day.
Yeah.
And you're good.
And
to do two sketches a day is insane.
And they're like, and you know, they're phenomenal. And the right. guy who directed the entire series and up to that point in the majority of this last season is a buddy of mine, Peter Atencio. Mm-hmm. And Peter and I have just, we were both directing sketches for this group called The Midnight Show at the UCB.
Yeah.
And we just immediately took to each other. Like, I liked his work, he liked mine. And then he showed me the pilot of Key and Peele, and it was like, oh, this is going to be huge. It was very obvious when I saw that I said bitch sketch that they were touching on something that no one had. Yeah. I was like, oh, if anything, just put this out, even if you don't get picked up.
Right.
This is like one of the best sketches I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then it was always kind of hanging that he was like, you know, if I can't do sketches, I want to bring you in. So then this last season, he was needed in post a couple days a week. So he brought me on and these guys, Fatal Farm, that do amazing sketches and VFX work. So like I think we both did 12 or 13 sketches. So it was probably like six shoot days. But it was different because the writers are locked in. Keegan and Jordan are locked in. The crew is locked in. But, you know, he gave me a couple of special sketches. And there was one in particular that when we shot it, I knew we had something special. It was this one about an a cappella group. And it's my favorite thing I've ever directed to this day. And I remember when I read the script last April, like 4 months before shooting it, I was like, I want this one so bad. Because I knew exactly what it was and mm-hmm. what it needed to be. And then luckily, Peter gave it to me. And
how does that work? You're saying so he had to just say he didn't want to do it, or just give it to you?
He would like assign us sketches. Gotcha. So he basically mm-hmm. was like, give me the 10 that you want most and the 10 that don't interest you, and then I'll give you. And also a lot of it was pairing it, because you know at certain locations you'd have to shoot these two together. Well, it was like, all right, he wants this one, he doesn't want that one, but. So wow. I got probably four in my top 10, and I got three in my bottom 10, but they all worked out. They all ended up being fine. And I'm happy that I got the ones that didn't, because it just, I don't know, well, it made me work.
Yeah, and it also, like you said, it forces you to work. It forces you to adjust and just figure out how to tell that story in your voice and make it work.
Totally. We mm-hmm. had one called Severed Head Warriors that starts with like a battle scene, and I had never...
I just love the title.
it's a crazy title. And I had never shot a battle scene, and it was like 2 weeks out. He was like, do you want to shoot that one? I was like, okay, sure. Never done anything like that
before. That's always been your mentality, though. Yeah,
just do it. Like, don't be afraid. And also, like, if somebody reaches out to me to, like, work with them, it's, you know, especially, like... It's always somebody that's like really, really, really funny. And I like to work with people that I think are 1,000 times funnier than I am, because that's the only way I'm going to get better.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I learn from them, and it's like a science.
It's so like what they say, like if you're the smartest guy in the room, what are you learning?
Yeah, there's no progression. You're not moving the ball forward. So,
And sure, you've never done a battle scene before, but and you hear stories like this all the time in Hollywood. They're like, well, you can do a Scottish accent, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yes, I can. You always say yes, and then you just go home and study hard that night.
Totally.
And figure it out.
It was great. I just like watched a bunch of stuff and then started taking notes.
Watch Braveheart. It was like, all right, I see what they did there.
Yeah, Braveheart. It was so many.
Was that the process?
Yeah. Just watch like any battle scene and just start mm-hmm. looking at the way they're cutting sequences and figuring out how it would fit. Because that one was a half a day shoot. We had two sketches that day.
Yeah.
I shot that one and got it done before lunch. And then we shot one with three people in a food truck, which is insanely impossible. Yeah. Three people and two cameras in a food truck is very
so you
hard.
Have a battle scene that's like an infinite amount of space, and then you had the food truck, which is no space.
So that was like a great day. I learned a lot that day. But I remember the acapella one, like after, like in the middle of the first take, I literally started pumping my fist like I was playing sports, because I was like, oh shit, this is it. This is that. Wow. This is that thing I've been waiting for.
How'd you know? What was the...
There was just something in their performance. There was a thing as they went, I started, because I've been a fan of the show since the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was watching the final product and I was like, oh, when the music's there and we color this scene, I know exactly what this is going to feel like to watch this scene. And it was right, and I literally was like, I was literally pumping my fist, and everyone was like laughing at me in monitors. They're like, what? I'm like, we got one. This is good.
That's awesome.
This is a really good one.
Now, when you're working with guys like that, who obviously are insanely talented, how do you give them notes, and are they open to it?
I mean, Keegan and Jordan are like the nicest. I mean, they're so nice that it's almost weird how nice they are. They're just really gentle, like open, and it's all about best joke wins. So like mm-hmm. and the thing is, before Key and Peele, I had worked with them. I had done some commercials for Comedy Central with them, and that may have been a test to see how we worked together.
Yeah,
like a year before, and they went really well. And then Keegan, this is amazing, in 07 Owen Benjamin had a show called Gay Town for crack.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that might be when I first met you.
Yeah.
Before that, that was before the Tyler thing.
It was before, a couple of years before that. Yeah. So he had me play a little part in it, and Keegan played a part in it, but we never acted together. And I remember one day we were there together because our scenes were being shot separate, and meeting him, being like, oh, that's the guy from Mad TV. Yeah. And he's like, and he complimented me. He's like, oh, I saw this scene you were in, and the show was really funny. Thanks, man. That's it. Then the first day I shoot with him, he's like, remember when we met on... And he, like, remembered it. I was like, met way more people in these years. Like, how did you remember that really?
He's like, because I was only in one show called Gay Town.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But I think because I've just done so much sketch and comedy, it's just like, well, I don't have... There's no time to be nervous. I got to just... We speak the same language. I got to just give notes. And I was, you know, even in pre-production, I would give a lot of ideas for lines and changes, and I would pitch it to them. And we were just comfortable. Those guys and I just clicked really well. So I would go up and just give them a little nugget of a note, and then they would run with it in a direction I never thought was possible.
That's so great. And then has there ever been and you don't have to name names, but has there ever been people where you've brought up a note and they're just like, no?
Scott Baio. What's that?
I mean, but don't get me wrong. Name names if you want to. Yeah. It's fine.
No, actually, I'm a very gentle director. I don't yell on set. I'm just for me, it's all about we all have to be comfortable. Otherwise, you can't.
Sure.
I don't think you can make. I think comedy is at its best when everyone is comfortable.
Yeah.
If people are on eggshells. Everybody is fucking up. The crews. Everybody starts messing up when there's like tension in the air.
Yeah.
So I think it's also because I used to act in my own stuff that I know what it's like to be in front of a camera. So like I don't know. I've never really had a. Anyone say no? I've worked with difficult people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Actually, there was somebody. Will not say her name.
Yeah.
Because she's very famous. But I did a bit, and it was like I will tell you guys when we stop reporting.
Yeah, sure. So tweeted us, and then we'll tell you guys
later.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you don't get blamed.
Her name rhymes with... No, I'm not going to do that.
Rhymes with Shmesica Schmalba. Yeah. No, it's not her. She's hot. Please come on the podcast.
No. It was not her. Absolutely. But it was one of those moments that was like, oh, this is like a cartoony diva moment where I can't believe this person's acting like... It was so insane.
You think you're on a prank show or some shit.
Yeah, that I was like, and I had very good reason to think I was being pranked because of where I was working at the time. And this still wouldn't give it away. It was something I shot at Kimmel.
Right.
Okay.
And so I remember at one point being like, Jimmy did this. This is
right.
Jimmy.
Yeah.
He's going to come out and like laugh at me and Guillermo. Yeah. And like that didn't happen.
And you're just sitting there like, oh, this is real. And so I probably shouldn't have just laughed at her face like, Jimmy told you to be this bitchy, didn't he?
Yeah.
He told you.
You play a really good cunt. Yeah. You play a really good cunt.
Very good cunt.
Very good cunt. Yeah. I bought it.
Good cunt, bad cunt. Yeah, no, you're both. Yeah.
But it's always been easy for me because performance is my favorite part of directing by far. That's my favorite thing to work on because I think that's the most important thing in the end.
So, I mean, you've done so much sketch. Obviously, that had to have been an influence growing up, right? I mean, for you to be this heavily into it, I feel. Or did you just kind of fall? Or were like in Living Color, SNL, like any?
Yeah, like I grew up obviously loving SNL.
Yeah.
And then in Living Color, I remember like watching the first episode and being like, whoa, like they have balls on the show. Because SNL at that time didn't. They were more silly.
Yep.
Which was fine. And then Mr. Show really changed stuff for me where I was like, that's like another level of writing where like I was just so, and there was no throwaway lines in the show. Like somebody would walk in a room and they would greet someone. They wouldn't just say that. There would be a joke. Something would happen all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that, and then Upright Citizens Brigade, I really loved that show. But you know, my focus has always been long form TV and film, but what happens out here is when you're directing comedy, people start asking you to shoot stuff and you just fall into a hole of sketch. And it's not bad. For me, it was just practice because the thing about sketch is you have to learn every genre. Someone's going to come to you with a horror thing. Somebody's going to come with an action thing. So you just are like, okay, I have to learn every style or an infomercial or like a pharmaceutical ad.
Sure, because you're parroting things. So because you're doing a parody, you have to get the subtleties that those genres have so that then when the joke happens it's more authentic.
Yeah, you have to. And so like it's so I had that attention to detail from wanting to be like a filmmaker.
Yeah.
But I got into filmmaking because I loved comedy. Like when I was a kid I wanted to be Sandler and then early 2000s, for like a few months, I did open mics up in the Bay Area because I didn't know what I wanted to do, and was like, oh, I don't have the guts to do this. And everyone I was around was like really bummed and sad, and they were like, you're going to have a drinking problem really soon. I was like, what the fuck is this shit?
This is the most unsupportive scene ever.
It was awful.
Wait, they were bummed that you weren't sticking with it?
No, they were bummed that they thought I would just become depressed, because I remember the first open mic I did.
Oh, see, depressed from doing comedy, yeah.
Yeah. The first open mic I did was at Rooster Teeth Feathers.
Yeah.
Sunnyvale, California.
I grew up literally 2 minutes from there.
Awesome. Love that place.
And I remember, and I knew enough about comedy. I'd read about it. I'd seen comedians talk about it. And these guys knew it was my first open mic. And this dude goes, oh, you should go first. Yeah, we should have him go first. Dude, that'd be great. And I knew that first was not good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, cool. I'll go first. And I knew exactly what this motherfucker was doing. So MC went up and he did really well. He's someone I've seen. God, what was his name? Joe something. He was so nice to me.
Scott Baio. Yeah.
It was a guy. He performs a lot in San Francisco. I don't remember his name. Oh,
I don't know.
White dude, Asian dude, black
white
dude.
White dude.
Sure.
Glasses.
It'll pop in my head later. But he was so nice. But this other guy, who all of his jokes were like about the .com world, so like everything was falling flat. Oh. And like he told a joke about buying AOL stock, and I remember being like, "What the fuck, you're
in Sunnyvale?"
And if it doesn't work in Sunnyvale, it's not working anywhere,
right?
Because like AOL's down the street.
You're not gonna go to the Omaha Funny Bone and be like, "You want to hear my .com chunk?"
Exactly. So
.com, would you call me?
So I went up and I did well on the first set I ever did. And I got laughs and it went well, and then I walk out and he wouldn't talk to me the rest of the night. And I was like, what is this shit?
I love this.
So did that for a couple months, and I was like, I don't want to do this. I'm going to get behind the scenes and write. And then a buddy of mine showed me The Big Lebowski, and it was the scene where John Turturro's bowling to the Gypsy Kings Hotel, California, and it leads all the way through like that 8-year-old pederast thing.
It's beautiful.
I was used to like Happy Gilmore, like comedies,
right?
And I had never seen a comedy that looked like this.
It was shot incredibly.
Like, what is this? And my buddy's like, oh, this is the Coen brothers, they did Fargo. I was like, Fargo was funny? Because I remember it being nominated, and to me, if anything's nominated, it's not a comedy.
Yeah,
like,
right,
comedy,
because they don't get nominated.
Which is bullshit. Everyone goes to them, but they don't get awards. Fuck that.
It'll change at
some
point.
Why is there not a best comedy award?
It'll happen when
Oscars.
Pete Rose gets allowed into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. So never.
Saul Lebowski.
So I saw Lebowski, and I was like, you can do this? You can have a scene like this? This is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And he's like, yeah, they write and direct their movies. And I was like, okay, I'm going to write and direct. And then
Jesus Christ,
just that, like
that moment that
just
was it.
Made you go, okay, that's...
And I had got my AA, and then, like, I wasn't working for... You know, I was just working. I wasn't in school. And I was like, I'm just going to go to school to learn how to direct. So San Jose State was down the street. I could have also gone to Academy of Arts, but I was like, I don't want to be around a bunch of pretentious dickheads. Like, I just want to borrow a camera and shoot. And I taught myself how to direct, how to write, how to edit.
Who told you to do that? Because obviously, like, you hear that from film school, people that are just like, yeah, go to school or don't go to school and just start making stuff. But, like, some people
It was just me, because I was like, I don't know how to make anything. I got to learn how to make stuff. So
I'm just going to make stuff.
And then I would literally just rent DVDs that had director commentaries and just listen to what they had
to say.
You start learning weird things. Like, American Beauty was the first one. And Sam Mendes was, like, so specific about visuals, and then that just, like...
What an incredible resource for a young, aspiring director.
It sucks, because they're not doing them as much anymore.
No.
Nobody cares but me. I'm the only
guy
who
gives a shit. Nerdy director kids.
Yeah, and it was, like, invaluable. So then I realized that it's hard to call it stand-up. It was more, like, kind of, like, talking and telling stories. But everything I ever wrote was incredibly visual, and that's when it all made sense. I was like, I'm supposed to oversee it. I'm not supposed to do it. I'm supposed to be the guy watching it and putting it together, because I've always been obsessed with comedy.
Yeah, that's an amazing realization to make, because most people that get into comedy, then, especially like they start into stand-up, they do it because they want to be up in front of people. They want to be the star or whatever. So it takes a lot to be like, oh no, I'm not that guy. I'm the guy that's supposed to be behind the scenes, and other people are going to get the credit, but I'm gonna sit back and be like, yeah, I did that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I want to just tell a joke visually. I want to tell a story. You know, like, to me, that, because I like telling stories in general. So I'm like, well, it'd be great if I could learn how to shoot. So we had a very loose program at the school, and we all kind of just taught ourselves. And my DP, who shot almost everything I've ever done, Chris Darnell, we went to school together, and we shoot all the time out here. And another DP I work with, my buddy Todd, is out here. It's weird. There was like a core three or four of us there at that time that all came down. And before and after us, it wasn't really that many people. We just were, it was lucky. We all got there at the right time.
That's why it's so necessary, too, to just start making stuff, because that's where you start form relationships and just get a little pack together.
Right.
And I mean, that's the reason for Mr. Show and for UCB. And it's just like, you know, just start, if you're not doing stuff, you don't put yourself in a position to meet people that are you could potentially come up with.
Yeah.
Do you remember what was like the first thing you shot that you were like? Because I used to make home movies all the time too, so it's kind of how. And I remember we would rewatch like in eighth grade, we'd film stuff on the weekends, and then sit down at the end of the weekend and watch it all, and just like laugh our asses off, and then we'd like quote our own shit at school because we thought it was so funny.
What? You don't know about the tuna fish sandwich sketch? Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Well, the first couple of things we had to do was reshoot scenes from like known movies. So at that time, it was stuff like you had to do stuff from like Clerks and stuff where like people around your age, because there was people that were trying to shoot scenes from like movies where like a 20-year-old was playing a grandfather of a 20-year-old. You're like, just shoot a scene of young. What the fuck are you doing?
Right. Yeah. You don't have to, because that's just one more thing that takes you out of it.
So
just remake the movie Kids and move on.
Yeah, exactly.
Underrated film.
One of the greatest comedies of all time.
Is it?
No.
No, it's devastating.
Definitely a drama.
It's so
Who
sad.
Was in that again? Wasn't there
The girl from Chloe. Chloe Sevigny. That girl.
She's in it? You just said Chloe, so that's the only Chloe I know.
Yeah,
so I guess.
No, and that's her. The one from, she's in Big Love. She was in, all that stuff.
Oh,
yeah,
damn.
Yeah, she was in Kids.
I'll tell you who was in it. Kids. Leo Fitzpatrick, Justin Pierce, Chloe Sevigny.
You were right.
That girl.
Directed by Larry Clark.
There you go.
Oh, man. Yeah, so the first scene I did was the thing from Clerks. That was whatever. And then the second one, I went off the list that they gave us, and I did a scene from Bottle Rocket.
Great.
Because Wes Anderson.
I was obsessed with him. I wrote my thesis on him because I just loved how empathetic he was. Right. I feel like something changed after he stopped writing with Owen Wilson. There was a humanity.
Totally.
Everybody was empathetic in his movies. It was because everyone has, in comedy, there's such a tendency towards just write an asshole character. And it's just like, it's hard. Like, I want to know why they're an asshole. Like, I don't want to just look, like, if I know why, it doesn't justify it, but you know where they're coming from. So you're not just like, I hate this person.
Yeah.
You know why they made the decision, and it's okay.
And it makes it funnier when you're like, wow, that guy believes this because he took that moment and thought, like, well, this means that. X. It, when you see the whole genesis of how people think, it's funny you bring up Wes Anderson, and it's so interesting when you bring up directors that you could not know that they made a movie, a film, or whatever, and you watch and you go, oh yeah, that's a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah,
like
if there's a 400 foot symmetrical dolly shot and an overhead of somebody's knickknacks that defines who they are, and a diorama, it's fucking Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
Like
and there's certain things that you go, yeah, that's a Quentin Tarantino movie. That's a whatever. Like it's really interesting to find directors that really have their style.
Yeah.
In terms of like, do you have anything like that? You have John Woo puts two guns and doves in every single one of his movies. So like, what's your thing? Or
do you
have a thing?
What's your John Woo?
I don't have a thing, but I've always, it's a great game show title.
What's your John Woo?
I've always if I get to the point where I'm directing movies, a thing that I think movies don't have enough of are scenes where characters are alone, because I think you can learn about a lot from somebody when they're alone. Like the first episode of Last Man on Earth is so amazing. I mean, it's all great, but it's really great. Like before he meets anyone, like
I was obsessed with that.
Gone on for a while. Like you just learn. I don't know. You're so vulnerable. You're not acting for anybody,
right? And you knew pretty much everything about that character just based on what he's doing with nobody around.
That guy's a
degenerate fuck up.
Yeah,
I think that partially has to do with the actor too, right? Like you got to want to watch whoever that is, by themselves.
Yeah, and he's got like I've said this to a bunch of friends recently, but like he's got a very, Will Forte has a very Steve Martin quality where like his mannerisms, his kind of everything about him, you're like, he's not a dick. He's making selfish decisions, but it's just because he doesn't know any better.
Right.
And
this is generally what he believes.
He's just making a quick decision, and then it comes back. Like you can keep watching him for that reason.
It's like Steve Carell in The Office, like such a brilliant character, like such a likable asshole, but like not. But you just also, you were like, oh, he doesn't know any better. He sees the world through those eyes, and that's Mm-hmm. And then every now and then, and this is why the show was so great, he was so great, every now and then you would check in and go, oh, he's got a heart. He's like a sweet dude.
Yeah, but, like, he was never making decisions at other people. It was all, like, how he was being perceived. So it all came from being vulnerable, and that's endearing. So, like, you know, it didn't matter. You can, as long as he didn't literally hurt somebody. But that's the thing. I feel like I like when characters are alone. I just feel like it's you,
did you,
learn,
like,
you learn a lot.
Castaway?
I don't think I think I made fun of it when I watched it. But it was, like, way late, because a buddy and I watched it.
Oh, boy, late Castaway jokes.
Late. Well, oh, buddy and I watched it, and he was, like, we were just, like, making fun of a lot of stuff. Because the problem was the trailer, I hope this is not a spoiler. Hopefully you've seen it at this point.
All right, if it's more than 5 years old, you don't have to say spoiler alert. Like, well, it's like...
All right, so Citizen Kane.
Yes, Citizen Kane. It's a sled. Spoiler alert.
But... I remember the trailer. It's like the crash, and then he's there, and then you see him, like, reuniting with Helen Hunt at the end. I'm like, well, I don't need to watch this. You
told me.
Why was that shot in there? It's crazy.
Yeah.
And it didn't look like a dream sequence, so I knew it would happen. But I remember my buddy was like, if a whale saves this guy's life, I'm going home. So there's that point at the end where he's on the raft, and this whale comes up, and it blinks, but it looks like it winks at him. Uh-huh. And my buddy literally, for the joke, got in his car, drove home, and then called me to prove that he went home, and then he came back. Pretty great. He really committed.
That's the guy that commits to the joke.
It was ridiculous. I'm not sure if it was worth it, but it was like, respect it.
You know what, though? I don't know who that guy is, but I already want to be friends with him.
Yeah. His name is Bobby. He's a good man.
Done. Are you intentionally right now looking to direct Jose Canseco in something?
I tried to put him in a sketch years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And... my manager at the time got a hold of Jose's attorney, because he didn't have an agent or a manager at that time.
He's a lawyer, okay.
And the lawyer said, Jose is a nightmare to deal with. You don't want to get him. It won't be worth it.
No.
And he was like, I can ask him.
Such great representation.
So we settled on Fabio. And then we got Fabio instead.
Oh, my God.
What weird world is
somebody
this?
Somebody please make a documentary just about that whole scenario about...
Well, like, that sounds like something from, like, a comedy movie. Like, we can't get Canseco. Can we get Fabio? We can get Fabio. The fuck?
We tried to get so many people, and I remember I was walking my dog, and I was on the phone with my manager, and he goes, "We can't." I was living in Studio City on Coldwater Canyon, and he goes, "We can't." You know, his lawyer saying he's a nightmare, mm-hmm. and I was like, "Okay." Literally, Fabio drives by. And I'm like,
he goes, I am also a Jose Canseco lookalike.
And I go, what about Fabio? Can you check on Fabio? Because he just drove by me, and we're just laughing. 20 minutes later, I get a phone call. They're like, he's in. And I was like, what? So the best thing is, and it was this really, like, throwaway sketch where we basically, like, wasted this cameo. As soon as he comes in the sketch, there's, like, a breaking news thing.
Yeah.
And then you come back and you've missed the whole sketch. And, like, it was so dumb. And so it was at Art Place. So I remember that, like, he texted me, I am here. And I was like, oh, I think this is Fabio.
I love how even you read his text in a Fabio.
I am here. And I remember walking out. This is 2000.
I've got hug for you.
This is hug for you. This is 2008. So I walk out on Coldwater, and I look, and there's Fabio walking down.
Holy
in like
shit.
This like tight Nike shirt without sleeves on it.
Was he walking in slow-mo?
No, but his hair was like
just gorgeous.
Beautiful. Stunning. So his hair's going, and he's... looking at the buildings, reading a MapQuest printout, and I had to walk away laughing. I was like, if he sees me, Fabio, like, not sure if he's in the right place.
Oh,
great image. Great image.
I could watch Fabio do anything and laugh.
Yeah.
Just because it's
Fabio. Why isn't that a Travel Channel show? Just Fabio, like...
take him anywhere.
Fabio travels.
Yeah.
Like, I would watch
that.
We can
work on the title. But yeah, like, Fabio. Where in the world is Fabio? I mean,
I go wherever my hair takes me.
Wow.
You should follow him.
So he was the best. And he was great.
I would watch Fabio play chess. I would totally watch that. Just see the look on his face of, like, I see what you did there with your opponent. Like,
you know what I would watch?
Totally
Fabio and Brad Williams remaking Twins.
I mean... that's got to happen.
Hey, Payman, what are you doing?
I was
going to
say, I'll direct that shit. You can watch it. I'll direct it. Are you kidding? I love that movie.
Done.
So
like,
good.
Waiting for
it.
I was talking about that not that long ago, and I was like, that's a movie, if they remade, they would have to use
both of them.
Both of them again. Because no one, they would, and also now with what DeVito's done on It's Always Sunny.
Yeah. Oh.
I feel like with that movie would just take another. That's almost like a let's look into it. Let's look into like doing.
You
this
have
again.
To.
And Arnold, he's just like this plastic monster now. Like,
can you do probably can still you do a sequel? Like, can you just do like a late Twins 2 sequel? Twins 2.
I think that's the move.
Even twinsier.
Jesus Christ! What are you trying to make people not buy the DVD?
Even twinsier.
I mean, I don't know. I'm making up words, but
I love making up words in a title. You're like, what is that a word? Like,
yeah. Yeah, even twinsier. I'll go see that.
I mean, it is. They are like one of the most like just beloved comedy duos.
Unintentionally, intentionally.
You would you do want to get into movies though? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's and that's the next. That's the next. I think for any director, yeah.
Hopefully, yeah. I think. I mean, I think so. I mean, I think there's probably directors that love doing episodic and TV and things like that, and I like that. I mean, half hour is really. You know, I've done a lot of sketch, but, you know, I did a half-hour show earlier.
Teachers.
Teachers,
yeah. When's it come out?
January.
On January what?
I don't know yet. I don't know if there's an actual date.
We'll plug it
January
when
on,
no, for sure.
On
TV Land.
On TV Land.
Hell yeah.
Who's in it?
It's this these six girls. They're out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. They're called the Katydids. They're all named Kate in real life. That's not
wow.
a joke. And three Katies, two Kates, and a Caitlin. And they performed in Chicago. I think in Second City, Chicago, or I forgot. I think there are multiple theaters. And then they made their own
web series
yeah. called mm-hmm. Teachers, which was just vignettes. It was little one-minute scenes.
Sure.
It got a little bit of traction. One thing led to another. All of a sudden, they packaged it, and then TV Land just bought it, just like that.
Jesus. And again, something that just doesn't – I mean, that's why you still see people making web series so frequently because they're like – because of stories like that where they're like, hey, you don't know – which I think is great. Like anytime I see somebody post or and I see somebody comment like another web series, I'm like, yeah, man, but A, who knows how much that stuff – how much that person has made at this point. You have to do that.
Right.
And you also – that shit can still happen.
It's proof of concept. It's you because the problem is if you don't – You'll be doing what I was doing, and you're doing sketch for years, and then people think you can't tell stories. So if you tell the story, then they don't have to imagine what your story would be like. Right. So,
and if you make that web series and you sell it, you could be eating at Paquito Moss five times a week.
Exactly.
Which is the real thing.
Wait, I mean,
it doesn't even matter what the market price on that ahi burrito is, man. Just take it. Don't tell me.
Is that your go-to?
Sometimes.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure only Eddie Murphy can eat there five times a week. I mean, that's just other world money.
What a great idea, too, for a show, because I don't feel like any it's all about
the elementary school teachers but the interesting thing is now there's like five shows about teachers.
Are there really?
Craig Robinson has one.
Oh, shit,
Danny
that's
McBride
right.
has one coming out.
Vice there's Principals
an,
yeah
yeah then there's one called Those Who Can't that's coming out on True TV, but this one's different because it's an elementary school. It's six young females.
Yeah.
The characters are all really big and fun and different, and but they got like Alison Brie attached as an EP. Jay Martell and Ian Roberts from Key & Peele were the. Mm-hmm. That's why I got on
because awesome,
they were the EPs from Key & Peele, and then they were like, so the pilot someone else directed, and then I ran into Jay Martell one day, and he was just like telling me, oh yeah, we're writing the series, and then that night randomly he emailed me, he's like, hey, would you be interested in like directing this? I was like, yeah, that's kind of what I've been fighting for 9 years.
Sure.
So then I just went in for like a series of meetings, and everyone was like, this is clearly a long shot because it's going to be the whole season and you can't, you know, from no episodes of half hours to that. And then
it just doesn't happen.
No. And then a couple weeks went by, and then all of a sudden I got an email one night that was like, you're directing the entire season. And then
that's
it just happened.
Awesome.
And
was that a rigorous 2 weeks of anticipation?
No, I took it out of my head because to me it was like, I'm not going to get this. I've been trying to get half hours forever and it didn't happen. So I never expect anything when I go into meetings.
Okay.
I'm so used to like getting a meeting and then being like, oh, I really want it and it doesn't happen. Like I was talking to someone last night about the ups and downs in Los Angeles and how I realized after a couple of years that those peaks and valleys are become tighter and tighter and tighter, and then you start realizing that it's just a rhythm, and you just got to ride it out. That when things are shitty, you know that, all right, I know then in a week I'm going to be able to get Paquito Moss. Like, I'm going to keep going back to that, but it's like, if I have a bad month, I know that it'll come around, and then when it's up, I don't get excited because I know what it's like to be down.
I was just going
to
say,
stay
a little neutral, right?
It's the only way to do it. Otherwise, you go fucking crazy.
Dude, when I came back from the heat, I had a 1 a.m. spot at the Comedy Store, literally, I think, the next night. And I literally was riding this movie high and just like being like...
I just worked with Sandra Bullock.
Part of me getting a little delusional, being like, it's all about the change, you know?
Yeah, right.
And then doing this 1 a.m. spot for like four people, and I was like, oh, thank God for this. And then it was a great, like, and then it just made me start to develop that mindset of like, and you have to enjoy, like,
Have fun.
Even when Brad did his hour special, he was all on cloud nine and pumped about it. And you have to, like, enjoy all the support and the numbers and fans and the and the new, you know, opportunities that come from it. But then go, all right, like, now back to the,
I got to write my second hour.
I got to keep going. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's the you can't get complacent. And there's so much talent out here that, you know, you got to just keep working.
Yeah, because I mean, you could have easily quit show business after you worked with Fabio.
I briefly considered it.
You could have just been like, you know what? It's never going to get any better.
Drop the mic.
I walked. I saw Fabio walk in holding a MapQuest piece of paper with his hair blowing gracefully in the wind. It's done. If we could develop an anti-aging serum. And we only had enough for one person. Can he get it?
Fabio's got it. It's probably
Ken's
his.
Got it. He's beautiful.
Or maybe the rest of us just have to like somehow drink his piss or something. To
hey, you know what? If that's the key, Fabio, just don't eat any asparagus, please.
maybe that's the plot of Twinsy. Even Twinsier.
Even Twinsier.
Like Brad's getting older, and he like doesn't know how to.
So we have to get Fabio's urine.
Now, if
like
you did
caper.
Direct this, would this be the first time you worked a little person, Brad? Or have you?
No, I think I did something with
in
Nick.
In sketch.
No, I did something with Nick Novecki years ago.
Okay, yeah.
Nick. Yeah. Nick and I have known each other. It's weird. We've known each other since we were like 7 years old.
Oh, really?
And then we both went into comedy. And now we're both kind of like, oh, hey, we're both doing this.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, that's amazing.
This is insane. And it was one of those things where we didn't keep up and like keep tabs. It was all of a sudden I'm doing comedy, he's doing comedy. We're like, oh, shit, we're both doing this.
Dude, that's great.
Who knew? Yeah, and now we see each other at the store all the time.
Were any of the jokes crossing over when you guys first started?
A couple of, because when you only have so much source material and you're young in the game and you have this thing that everyone wants you to write jokes about and you don't know how to write jokes, so you're literally, sorry for the pun, but you're going for the most low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Both of you were like, black people like this, white people, right?
Every time, every joke. Every joke's like, what's the deal with airline food? You know. There was absolutely some crossover, but now like we've definitely developed our voices separately. He does his thing, I do my thing, and it's really cool to see, like when I saw him on Boardwalk Empire, I didn't think like, fuck, when did I get that? I'm like, dude, Nick just did a boxing scene on Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You got punched in the face.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
That's the attitude, man.
Yeah.
You know, I I've never been a competitive person. I don't understand it. Because to me, it's like, I don't get bummed when other people get stuff because I don't want people to be bummed when I get stuff.
Right. You still want to put that out there.
Well, if I, like, literally, if I miss out on a gig, I'm like, yeah, I'm bummed. But imagine how pumped whoever got this is.
Right.
And that just like, whatever, it's fine. It'll work out. It'll work out. I just got to keep working.
And
hey,
you missed out on the house bunny, but like you said, if you had gotten that,
I would have never worked again.
Right.
And no one would have ever hired. Dude, I would have fucked that movie up so bad.
You'd be working at Paquito Mas.
Well, I mean, on the bright side, you get Paquito Mas. This has been the greatest commercial for Paquito Mas.
If we don't
ever get
at least a free fucking tub of cheese.
That's all you want.
That's all I want.
Free
I'm very simple
cheese
over here, man.
But I mean, don't get me wrong. Very large tub of cheese. We can dive into it Scrooge McDuck style.
Yeah, that's
but
all I want.
I'm into that.
Yeah. But
that's we're going to talk about things I'm into.
Yeah.
That's on the list.
That's about it. But yeah, so you didn't get that at that time. You built up your resume. You got the skill set together. Now, if Sandler came to you or whoever comes to you and says, I want you to be at the helm of this movie, I think now you'd be like, okay.
Yeah, now
I'm more confident with that.
I can do it now. Now I can run a crew and all that stuff.
You can bring Rob Schneider his tea.
from what I've observed from you directing wise, and from what I've heard from colleagues in the business, and then all my experience from you and Paul Feig have a lot of similar qualities.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah, dude.
I could tell by his shirt with the whale on it and the fact that Paul Feig always shows up wearing a suit.
Well, okay. That might
you
be the
so
one difference.
So much in common.
No, but like,
are you serious?
Yeah, man. As you were saying, too, about like keeping people comfortable and keeping things loose and like being yourself and like having just a game plan and you have a very clear vision. And GB, the Busters.
Oh,
and,
really?
The Busters? Is that what we're calling it now in the trades?
I think that's the official title.
Okay, the Busters.
And like, dude, he's like so locked in right now, like even more so than the first time when I like met him and got to work with him. And Yeah, man. Totally.
Thanks. I mean, that guy's amazing. That's
yeah.
Crazy. That's
so I feel like movies, the trajectory of that for you is for sure in the future.
I hope so.
So yeah. If they ever do like the House Bunny 2. That'd be yeah. Like, you're like, now I am ready.
Yeah. There's also there's also a lot of movies we've come up on this podcast for Brad to star in. Little Rabbi.
Little Rabbi, come on, man. Hey,
come on,
you
man.
Can see it.
I can see it.
The curls are dragging behind me.
I mean, I'm trying to think of movies also that are based around Judaism, like Keeping the Faith with Stiller and Edward Norton. Did you ever see that? And Jenna Elfman?
No, I never saw that.
Great movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. They're like a trio of best friends, and then they both fall for Jenna Elfman. And all right, spoiler alert. And
And one's a priest and one's a rabbi.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, Fiddler on the Roof and fucking Schindler's List. I think those are the only three.
Yeah,
the big three.
Yeah. Most like Jewish centric
things. The Hat Trick of Hebrew. Which is the fourth. That's what we call it.
Oh, my God. All right. If there's ever a Jewish player in the NHL, that has to be his nickname. From Nova Scotia, the Hat Trick of Hebrew. Give it up.
What's his name?
I don't know what a Canadian first name is, but his last name is Berkowitz.
Troy.
Troy Berkowitz. Forward for the New York Islanders. He'd have to be from Long Island.
No,
I'd
have to be for like the Tel Aviv gefilte fish.
Wait,
gefilte fish. I want to see that mascot.
Me too. Oh my God, the human gefilte fish, which you can also pay for in Vegas.
I mean, if you can do a sketch of rejected mascots, and then it's just like the human gefilte fish.
Have you met Neil Brennan before?
I don't think I've actually met Neil.
Really?
No.
I would love to hear you guys talk about directing comedy.
Yeah, I have a shitload of respect for
him. We'll have both you and him on the podcast. Adam and I will just say, hi, everybody, and then we'll just sit back, and then we'll like have you guys...
We'll just geek out.
Yeah, just geek out like James Lipton style for to each other.
Chappelle's Show was for sure something that... I mean, because I feel like Key and Peele was the first show since that to come along and really... kind of hit stuff the way that they did.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, other than the smash hit Mind of Mencia that had a very talented little person on it that would hump things.
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, that was a smash. I mean, huge show. I mean, going across cultural boundaries, just brought the nation together. I think we healed.
Brought the nation together.
I think since 9/11, the country hasn't come together.
Just shut the fuck up. Just shut up.
You're gonna end up on a blog, man.
you're like Fabio looking for the fucking.
You're gonna be in a square on Fox News explaining yourself.
Someone will take that seriously and be like, comedian Brad Williams says, "Mind of Mencia help the nation heal after 9/11, even though it happened 8 years afterward." absolutely.
That's at Brad Williams on Twitter. At Funny Brad.
Yeah, Funny Brad on Twitter.
You are on Twitter at Payment Benz.
Yes.
PAYMEN.
MAN.
BENZ.
And you're funny on Twitter, dude.
Yeah, man.
Oh, thanks.
You're okay. Just to give people an idea.
This is really scary because you looked at my. I don't know what you're.
Okay. You just.
What if we just made up tweets
you said
this is Jews are.
This is something you actually tweeted. I just saw two butterflies having sex, or they may have been fighting. Either way, this boner isn't going down anytime soon. And to me, I read that tweet. I'm like, I'm in. I'm following this.
Yeah. Great.
I'm in.
Yeah. I'm a child. I'm like.
And the one below that, raise your hand if you plan on eating McDonald's breakfast for dinner. Now take that hand and slap yourself in the face with it. You're an adult.
I have some issues with McDonald's.
Me too.
I haven't eaten it in over 10 years.
Really?
The last time I did, I had a snack wrap and fries and got sick and was like, well,
of
this.
You did.
And people will defend it like, oh, dude, but the fries. I'm like, I've had them. Mm-hmm. I remember what it tastes like. I don't need it again.
Yeah.
I don't need it.
It's like when Jack in the Box got E. coli outbreaks and kids died. I go, hey, remember when kids died from eating that? As soon as I heard one kid died, I go, cool, never eating Jack in the Box again. And same thing, my buddy's like, what about the fries, man? I'm like, what about the fries? He's like, you don't have to get the burger. Get the fries. I'm like, dude, if a stripper gave me herpes, I'm not going back for the fucking hugs.
Right. You know?
The damage has been done. Unless it's sponsored by Contego's Hug for You. But,
yeah.
It's also, I don't understand. Like, we have so much food in this country.
Yes.
Don't, who can't,
limit
like,
yourself.
We have too much. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, their fries are good, but is it, I mean, Is it really worth it? I don't know. I don't trust.
Unless they want to sponsor this podcast, in which case I will have a quarter pound of cheese every day for the rest of my life.
That will be. Hey, we'll have to talk about that.
That's a very short life.
I'll be dead in a week, but whatever. I'll die happy.
You saw Super Size Me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, it's great.
I mean, amazingly, terribly inspiring / depressing.
It's
I mean, when kids are like, know who Ronald McDonald is versus George Washington, I mean, that shit's like,
it's sad.
Funny, and then like, oh no.
I
don't know what you guys are talking about. I think McFlurries are delicious.
They are. And I ate one in Amsterdam, stoned, while watching women in the red light district doors dance at me. And they danced at me and tried to taunt me to come in, and I danced while eating my McFlurry and taunted them to come out.
Amazing.
Yeah. Myself, I was lost for like 4 hours.
Well, yeah, that, and they're not going to win because it's like, yeah, you're dancing and trying to, but I have a McFlurry.
Yeah,
I'm winning at life. Like I'm eating my McFlurry. I'm good. I'm happy.
I was secretly hoping one of them would open the door and be like, "It looks so much better to be out there," you know, and ask me for a bite and trade me for something.
Follow you on Twitter.
Teachers comes out.
Yes,
Teachers comes out in January.
January. Just check your local listings.
Find out where TV Land is.
Have you yet to work? I know you're a big Clippers fan too.
Mm-hmm.
Have you yet to work with like an athlete that you're like Jose would have been it for you,
right? I have pitched Blake in so many projects.
Everyone
knows
he's funny as hell.
He's really funny, and he's a comedy fan. He like thinks like a con. Like
he's done some of those readings of like when Jensen Karp organizes those readings of like famous movies or something. He'll come and read as a character, and he's hilarious.
Oh, Divine and I went to some Clippers games. He loves Workaholics, and at post game we go back and talk to him, and he's like quoting the show to him. I'm like, oh man, you're just a big fucking kid.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, I'll get him in something. I tried to get him and DeAndre in something. Actually, in one of the VMA sketches, we tried, but they were both out of town.
Shit. Oh.
And I was like, wait, they won't say no to Miley. Like, we'll get him.
Yeah. Right.
And then they weren't available. I was like, God,
just
man.
The visual of that, because Miley's about an inch taller than me. And then you got DeAndre Jordan.
She's, I don't know if I say, she's great, by the way.
Yeah.
She's so cool.
She seems just with it and down for whatever.
She, like, we were talking at one point. I was just, like, talking about partying and stuff. And she goes, dude, I'm 23. I'm just getting it out of my system. I was like, that's a really grounded thing for you to say.
Christ.
And also, like, we were all, like, crazy when we were 23.
Sure.
I was 23 and everyone knew who I was. It could be a lot worse. I think people just assume that she's in that same boat as, like, Britney and Lindsay.
Yeah.
But she hasn't done anything.
Also, stop putting them on these giant pedestals to where they can't even be themselves. Stop creating an idea of who they are. Like, oh, Miley should never drink. Fabio should always know where he's going and not need Google Maps. You know, stop boxing them in.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, even Bieber, when they were like, I can't believe he's pissing in trash cans and bringing weed on planes and getting a pet monkey. I'm like, he has $60 billion and he's fucking 20.
Yeah, I don't, like, when
year olds. What?
If pretty much anyone who reaches global status goes crazy or, you know, melts down or something, if that's happening, maybe it's not the people. Maybe we're not built for that shit. Like, if it keeps happening, if it was Michael Jackson went crazy, Prince went crazy, seems like the only person who hit that level who didn't melt down
was Ted Danson.
Paul McCartney. He seems like he has his shit together.
Met him at the Improv. Met at the Improv a month ago.
I saw pictures of people with him, and I was like, what is going on here?
Could not have been cooler. Bought me a drink, sat down, was like, Adam, great set. What are we drinking? I'm like, I'll drink anything. I'll do anything to you. Like, what do you need? You
know, and he was a Beatle.
Dude, could not have been more fucking normal. And I'm like, it was fucking with me, because I'm like, I don't think there's, you know.
Yeah, you're like outside yourself.
Yeah.
Like, this is not.
So when someone hits that level and can't deal with it, I don't get mad at them, because I'm like, no, it's clear that we can't handle that shit. That there are no, like, it's not like there, you know, animals don't have to deal with that stuff.
Yeah.
So like, you know, animals don't, like, I just feel like, imagine living a life where nobody says no to you. How do you not go crazy? And everyone
wants... But at the same time, everyone wants something from you.
Yeah, they want something. Yeah. You feel the eyes on you.
They expect you to always... Every interaction, like... That's why I love the stories when people are like, I met Miley Cyrus at the airport once. Such a bitch. Like, she just... I screamed at her. She was coming out of the bathroom, running to catch her flight. She turned back at me and, like, just, like, looked at me weird.
Yeah.
And I was like... hey, and waving, and she didn't even wave.
Yeah,
and
she didn't even come take a picture with me. She didn't even listen to my demo tape.
I was wearing an I Love Miley shirt. Yeah, that's just crazy. So she's just super cool.
She's great. She's like she was really nice and friendly to the crew and
well
like
adjusted.
Never well adjusted and like didn't like she's just cool as shit. Like there was never.
That's probably why she's still working so much. Everybody wants to, because that's a big part of it, right?
Yeah.
You know that too as a director, that like there are, you're probably starting to hear or deal with firsthand of people where you're like, oh, cool, like mental note, like Scott Baio is not going to be, Jesus, I'm really taking that on the bass.
Yeah.
Yo, SB, man, if you're listening, it's all in good fun, man. Come on the podcast.
Yeah, and then we'll go to Paquito Ma's house. Yeah.
He's probably got private Paquito in his fucking apartment.
Private Paquito.
Wait a minute. Wait. Private Paquito is a beach cop show I want to write.
You know, I'm here for the job. I am Private Paquito. Well, no, because like poquito means small in Spanish.
So oh my God, that's what it is. So and you're Private Paquito.
I am Private Paquito.
Paquito.
Jesus.
Is a sponsorship?
Is the nickname my friend?
Dude, not a bad idea. I don't know how much money Paquito Moss has, but like if you're talking about like a
good campaign,
a viral series, just quick vignette things of you. You know, if you like solve it, like making people's days better by delivering Paquito Moss, maybe.
Yeah. If I'm Private Paquito, maybe I like solve a crime and then like I see the bad guy running away and I throw a delicious Paquito Moss burrito at him. It like hits him in the head.
And then you
bounce up in the air. I catch it, take a bite.
Look at the camera and say. What's your catchphrase?
What's the catchphrase? You are mass in trouble.
Wow. I don't know. Nice.
Nice.
Does that work off the top of my head?
I like it.
That's better than I was thinking. I was just thinking, you just look in the camera and go, it's a good. But it's like, you know, that's, yeah. Well, this was fucking awesome.
Yeah, thanks. Right. This was great.
Yeah, I mean, you got to come back on when Teachers comes out.
Yeah, definitely. To be honest.
Yeah, because we'll plug it, and then hopefully then you'll have your gyro scooter skills a little better.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Really quick, I just need to touch on that. The picture will have already been posted on my Instagram.
Wait, did you actually post it?
I'm going to. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so Payman learned, obviously Brad Williams, as you all have known from our Instagrams and this podcast, has become a giant supporter and advocate, and hopefully soon spokesman for the Funky Duck.
Yes.
If you don't know what a Funky Duck is, it's a Segway without arm bars.
Well, yeah, it's a gyro scooter. People call it a hoverboard. I don't know what people are trying to call the
why would you
now.
Not call it a Funky Duck?
I want to call it a Funky Duck. It's a badass name for it.
Okay.
It is.
So
rappers, athletes, and Brad.
Yes. Wiz Khalifa has one.
J.R. Smith has one.
Brad Williams has one.
Well, Mary fuck one, kill.
One of these is not like the other
so,
ones.
So as we're entering the apartment, you try to get a quick tutorial. And it was the most adorable thing ever because... Yeah, and it's the same thing I did. Like, you have to hold the person's hand because it's really...
It's way more sensitive than I thought it was. And I was rocking back and forth, and I was like, oh, this is just going to go on for... I'm just going to rock until I fall.
Yeah. But then I held your hand.
Which is also Bruce hand. Springsteen's motto for that.
Yeah.
Two, three, four!
At some point, I'm just going to fall off this fucking stage.
I'm going to come out of the factory and head up on stage, and I'm going to rock until I fall. Two, three, four!
Nice. I don't think I've ever heard
good.
You.
That's my Bruce.
Springsteen. Yeah.
That's my Bruce.
All right, so after Little Rabbi and Twins 2, we got to write Springsteen Jr.
We got a trilogy on our hands. This is great.
Perfect, man.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
So, that's the show.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also,
Get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.